It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. If you were listening to Top 40 stations in 1995, there's a good chance you turned on your radio and heard this song. And in case you've forgotten, that's a song called Roll to Me, which was a top 10 hit on the U.S. charts for Justin Curry and the Scottish alternative band Delamitri. As is often the case, the band members went their separate ways, and now Mr. Curry, a talented singer-songwriter, is touring the country as a solo act, and he is hitting the stage at the Club Cafe on the South Side tonight. But a few weeks back, when he was checking on ticket sales for his Pittsburgh show, he saw that the totals were alarmingly light. So he turned to Facebook and posted the following desperate plea.
Hello, people of Western Pennsylvania. I have sold a laughable amount of tickets so far for my show in Pittsburgh at the Club Cafe on the 18th of September. It was up to 9 last week. 9 isn't very good. But I'm still doing the show, so tell someone you know in Pittsburgh that I'm fabulously entertaining and do the whole show suspended from the roof by my nipples like Richard Harris in A Man Called Horse. Because 9 is pitiful, but 13 is an audience over and out.
And so, such is the plight of the modern-day musician. Exactly how does an accomplished singer-songwriter, a few years past his heyday, make a living in a crowded and fickle entertainment world where fans may not know your game or remember your name? I'm joined now in Studio A by singer-songwriter Justin Curry. Justin, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you very much.
And also joining our conversation is WYEP Program Director Mike Sauter. Mike, welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh.
It's great to be here.
So, Justin, in the week since you put your note on Facebook, how are ticket sales looking for your Pittsburgh show tonight?
Well, they've gone from all the way from 9 to 19.
So you boosted it by 10.
That's not bad.
So a lot of people would look at that and say, forget it, I'm not doing the show.
Well, we didn't really want the promoter to get his fingers burnt, so we offered the promoter a get-out clause, but she wants me to do the show, so I'm happy to do it. I have played to 2 people before in a vast arena. I've also played to like a few hundred people in venues that hold 15,000, so I'm quite used to these situations.
So why go ahead and do it? What makes you want to persevere in a situation like that?
I don't really have anything else to do. And, I'm on the road, so I want to do the gigs. And, I mean, to be honest, 19 isn't, it's not that bad. I've definitely had smaller crowds. So that's fine by me.
Do you ever ask yourself, I was a top 10 artist. I was on the charts in the United States. My song was being played all the time, and now here I am, and no one seems to know or maybe not care, at least in this case.
Oh, but that's just part of the job. I mean, when you start out, you play to tiny little crowds and people, I mean, my band have emptied rooms of thousands of people because they didn't, they didn't like the music. So I'm quite used to it. I mean, You go through ups and downs all the time. I mean, we would have situations in the past where we'd be playing to, 5 or 6,000 people in the UK, and we would come to America and we'd play to, 50, 70 people, and it's fine. I quite like all that variety. As long as I'm doing gigs, I don't really mind.
You still like being on the road and traveling?
I love being on the road. I love being away from home. I love traveling.
Well, and you're away from home on an historic day, which we'll talk about a little bit later. But Delamitri had its share of hits back in the 90s. Kiss This Thing Goodbye, Always the Last to Know, among them, along with Roll to Me. Some people might imagine that you can live quite well off the residuals of those songs. Is that possible?
Well, with a song like Roll to Me, which was still played a lot on the radio in the States and a bit in the UK. We bought a couple of houses off the back of Roll to Me being a hit in America. And that's essentially how I still make my living is from songwriting royalties. If I didn't write those songs, I would have been looking for a job, or I would have got a proper job a long time ago.
Is that possible today in the current climate?
Well, yes, but you have to have the hit first. I mean, you have to have that song on the – it needs to be on radio playlist. And getting to that point is much harder than it used to be because record companies, there's not as much money in the record industry as there used to be. Most of the money is now elsewhere. So the record companies sign a lot less bands. And a band like us now wouldn't get signed because we're not, you know, outwardly commercial enough, I wouldn't have thought.
So, Mike Sauter, what is the business model for recording artists today and how has it changed?
Well, although it's easier for bands getting their start today to record their music than it used to be and to promote their music, the fact of the matter is that because it is easier for one band or one artist, it's easier for everybody. And so it's increased the amount of competition out there at the same time. So when Justin was beginning with Delamitri, his band had more of a chance to stand out amongst the crowd because it just wasn't as crowded. But now if you have kids in their bedroom in their garage recording full-on albums that sound great, I mean, something that maybe 20, 30 years ago you'd have to have – you know, thousands and thousands of dollars to be able to make that sound and create that recording. Now, since everybody can do it, it's all out there, and each person is only getting much less attention. So it's much, much harder to break through. And speaking to what Justin was talking about with songwriters being able to kind of have their royalties coming in and being able to live on, to be able to get that next album or the next phase of their career going, it's much harder because of the distribution method. It used to be that people would go out and buy a physical object, a CD, a cassette, a record. Then it changed to more and more people buying downloads, just a digital copy. And it seems like songwriters and artists get a smaller piece of the pie when it comes to digital.
Yeah.
And then now it's changed even again, where more and more people are just streaming the song and not even purchasing a copy of it. There's streaming services out there that people might pay to be able to listen to large amounts of music, or there's YouTube and things where people watch the video to listen to the music. But in those cases, there's less and less money going to the artists.
And it doesn't seem to be a very artist-friendly model. And I was reading that Roseanne Cash, for example, was warning that the paltry returns to artists in the age of internet streaming threatened to kill the music industry. She said that she earned $114 for 600,000 online streams of one of her songs. How bad is it if you're trying to make a living off your recordings in this day and age?
Well, I mean that is a problem. I mean what Mike says is absolutely true. What happens every time there's a format change in the music industry is that the artist, it takes 10 years for the artist's lawyers and representatives to negotiate those royalties up to something that artists can live on. So at the moment, the royalties from those streaming services are really pitiful. And that is a bit of a worry. But I mean, it's not just the artists that are suffering. Also, the music buyers suffering because they don't really own what they're buying. So, for example, when I used to buy records, I mean, I could bequeath my record collection to my children, or I could sell my record collection, and other people would then rebuy that stuff, and the music industry wouldn't be getting any of that money, but people would be rebuying records, so I mean, that keeps the record shops going, and also people are owning that music and they've got an investment in it. Whereas you don't really own a download, you just license it, and you can't give it to somebody else, you know, unless you break the law. It's a very strange situation.
And so, Justin, your latest album, is it available on Spotify?
Yes, I didn't want it to be available on Spotify, but the label services company, which to all intents and purposes are a record company, just said it was undoable without putting it on Spotify. But I kind of fought against it, and I lost that particular battle.
And so the result then is what do you get out of it?
Well, I don't get anything out of it. I mean, I haven't made any money out of any of the solo records I've made, and I've sold sort of respectable amounts of copies. And again, as I say, if you don't write songs, you're really in a very difficult position, because I can't really figure out how somebody like me, or somebody who is a much more commercial artist than me, would make money if they didn't write their own material, because the only income I have is from radio play, effectively.
Mike Sauter, explain the big divide on U.S. commercial radio back in the 80s and 90s, back when Delamitri was trying to reach its audience in the United States. And they certainly did that through making it onto the charts and having one song that charted in the top 10. But back in the 80s and 90s, there was apparently a big divide between rock, pop, and country. How might that have impacted a group like Delamitri and possibly led to them falling through the cracks?
Well, it seems in the U.S. that there's always historically been more of a divide in England and Scotland. I think Justin can speak to this, that over time there seems to be less of a wall between what's considered pop music and what's considered rock music. Just as a music fan here in the U.S., it always seems like in England, you know, in the music press, you'll have rock bands talk about, you know, wanting to write that, you know, great pop song. And in the U.S., there seems to be more in the rock world. Pop music is seen as it's almost like a dirty word. It's you know, if you're considered a pop band as a rock band, that could be considered a kiss of death for you. You want to be considered a rock band and not a pop band. And so we have and I think a lot of it comes to do with the way radio stations, the whole system of radio stations in the U.S. evolved very differently from in England. And here in the U.S., you have these sort of silos that are separated, where radio stations play just one narrow niche of music, and that's they don't really expand out of that. And so rock music is different from pop music here in the U.S., and people think of pop as sort of more bubblegum-ish and not really something that's hip and cool, and whereas rock music is viewed as something that's a little more you know, kind of cool and something that people want to be more associated with, if that's your mindset. And vice versa, if you're into pop music, you're not as into rock music. Country is the same thing. It's a whole separate thing, and some of the rock fan might look askance at the country fan and vice versa, whereas it seems like in other countries that's not always the case. Certainly in England, it's a little bit more fungible and it mixes up a little bit more.
So as you're trying to make your way with your solo material today, where are you turning for radio play?
I honestly don't know. I mean, in the UK, in the UK we have a kind of nationalized radio system. We have the BBC, which really rules the roost as far as rock and pop music is. And traditionally, Mike's right, in the UK, there was really just one station that played rock, pop, everything really, you know. I mean, they would play progressive rock and they would play just everything. I mean, the nighttime schedules were slightly different than the daytime schedules. But actually now the BBC is kind of diversified. And because of digital, there are now more digital stations. So they've got one real pop station. They've got one real kind of AOR station and one kind of dance station and one kind of rock. Yeah, I said that anyway. So that is sort of changing. It's going over to the American model, which is weird because it means you start getting ghettoized. So... but for me in the UK, there's only one station I can go to that might play my records, and if they don't play your records, you're over, you're dead in the water, basically. So it's a very narrow field that you've got to play.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. My guest is singer-songwriter Justin Curry. I'm also joined by Mike Sauter, program director for our sister station, WYEP. You can join the conversation at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is esspgh@wesa.fm and on Twitter at esspgh, hashtag EPLive. Justin, in terms of writing songs, how do you manage to, in this day and age, write evocative, original songs while avoiding the pitfalls and the cliches that are evident in so many of today's pop songs?
Well, I don't know if I do. It's up to somebody else to say. I mean, pop songwriting is quite an odd thing because you do need to utilize cliches. You can't be too esoteric, I don't think. It's not really the right form for that. I mean, it is a popular form, but you don't want to just repeat what somebody said before. You know, you don't want to rewrite Heartbreak Hotel. You want to do something slightly different if you can. And people often ask that rather strange question, which is, haven't all the good songs already been written? Which is quite a sort of profound philosophical question in a way. And maybe they were all the great songs were already written because maybe they were all encapsulated in Heartbreak Hotel or I don't know, or in Rock Around the Clock. I don't,
you know, what do you think? I mean, you can't. You wouldn't be sitting down and trying to write something, would you? If it had already been, if you felt like there was no point.
Yeah, you know, if you consider that stuff, you just go insane. I mean, my girlfriend asked me about 10 years ago. If I think Bob Dylan's that good, then why do I bother? And that's a very good question as well. But you just don't think about that because you're just. I mean, I always say the songs write you. You don't write the songs. These things just pop up and demand to be written, and that's what you do. And if you can make a living out of it, great. If you can't, fine. You know, just keep letting the songs come out through you somehow. You know.
Speaking of which, let's listen to a tune that you performed live on WYEP from your latest album, Lower Reaches. It's called Falsetto.
I didn't want to be here. I'd never lie. Your dad, 'cause he never loved the fact that you were you. And you like to sing falsetto, which real men shouldn't do. I'm mumbling through the hymns. I can see him now. Beside you, as you try to find a way to sing.
That's Justin Curry and a song called Falsetto. And what inspired that particular song?
Well, all the songs I write now I'm nearly 50, are about either illness, death, or funerals. So it's the last one of those three.
Yeah, I kind of picked up on a sort of a down vibe there. Mike Sauter, how does a station like WYEP help an artist like Justin find an audience for his work?
Well, as we were talking about earlier, with radio stations in the U.S. being the way they are, we try to hark to an earlier age of radio where it was more of a big tent approach to music, and you can have different genres comfortably sitting one next to the other, a rock song next to a folk song next to a blues song next to a reggae song. If you look at the evolution of radio in the U.S., that's, you know, when FM rock stations started in the late 60s and evolved in the 70s, that's how they began. You could have, you know, an R&B track next to something much more folky, next to something real hard-edged rock and roll. And over time, it's kind of been the cycle where things will be expansive and then narrow down to something very, very focused. At WYP, we take that Big Ten approach, and that's something that certainly artists appreciate because mm-hmm. you can have more of a wide variety of music, and therefore we can be more inclusive to artists even as they meander from one end of the spectrum to the other as they, you know, follow their artistic muse.
Exactly, as they realize their own complete artistic vision. Justin Curry, today Scotland is holding a referendum on whether to declare independence from England. Are you able to vote while you're over here?
Well, I applied for what's called a postal vote before I left about 3 weeks ago or something. So I had to make my mind up a little earlier than I wanted to.
May I ask you how you voted?
I voted yes. And I was
yes, meaning that you.
I voted for Scotland to become an independent country, having been against independence all of my life. My father's always been pro independence, and my mother against. And
what changed your mind?
A lot of things changed my mind. I mean, partly engaging with social media and finding that the Yes campaign had all the rational arguments on their side, and the No campaign had hardly any rational arguments. So I had to kind of, in the cold light of day, I had to really kind of examine my motivations for being a no voter. And they were pretty lame. In fact, it's funny because there's been quite a lot of propaganda from the national. There's only one newspaper in the whole of the UK which has supported independence. The rest have all been really sort of vitriolically against it. And the argument from the No campaign, I mean, the No campaign has been dreadful. That's another reason why I ended up voting yes. It's been really negative. It's been really, they've just been trying to scare the electorate into not thinking about things. But the No campaign have been saying don't let your heart rule your head. Well, in an awful lot of people like me's cases, it's the other way around. It's actually our head that's overruled our heart. Our hearts haven't wanted to have left the Union. We love the English, we love the Welsh, we love the Northern Irish. We don't really want to leave that family of nations. But looking at it very logically and rationally, politically, it's the only choice for us, because Scotland votes way to the left of the south, the southeast of England, which is where all the power is in the UK. It's where all the money is and where all the power is. So if you can extricate yourself from that situation politically, you will basically be more free. You'll be living in a far more democratic country.
How much has popular Scottish culture, which you are an integral part of, contributed to Scotland reasserting a separate identity?
You know, probably quite a lot. I mean, not in our case, but certainly there have been a lot of very successful writers and playwrights, and to a certain extent, movie makers, comedians, and songwriters and bands that have internationally kind of stamped a kind of Scottish identity on the world stage. And I think that has allowed Scotland, that's really only happened that's happened since the last referendum in 1979. Before that, Scotland was much more of a cultural backwater. And I think that's engendered a kind of cultural sense, a sense of a separate cultural identity, which didn't exist maybe in the 1970s and the early 80s. So I think that explains partly why the vote is so evenly split at the moment. Whereas if they'd had this referendum 15, 20 years ago, it would be much more on the no side, I think.
And are you proud of your part that you've played in this whole?
I wouldn't say that we have played a part, but if we have, yeah, I mean, pride's not an emotion I particularly identify with. Neither is, I mean, I'm not a patriot and I'm not a nationalist, but I do believe in seizing any opportunity to make our society more fundamentally equal, which is not going to happen, as far as we can tell, if we stay within the United Kingdom.
Singer-songwriter Justin Curry. Justin is performing tonight at 8 at the Club Cafe on the south side, about 100 yards from here. Justin, great meeting you. Thank you so
you
much
too.
For being here.
Cheers, Mike.
And Mike Sauter, program director of our sister station, WYEP. Thanks, Mike. What, I'm sorry, what was that, Justin?
Never mind. I called you Mike. I meant Paul. Sorry.
Oh, that's all right. Yeah, as long as you get the name right and I'm not late for dinner, everything's good. Coming up, travel correspondent Elaine LaBombe on Fall Destinations. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.